This is Explorers Podcast number 94, Alexander von Humboldt, German Explorer of Latin America, Part 5. It's March 30th, 2013, and welcome to the 94th episode of Explorers Podcast, brought to you by 66south.com. I'm Tom Ingalls. In this episode, the fifth of five parts, we're going to pick up where we left off in Part 4, and at the end of Part 4, it was August 1802, and Alexander von Humboldt and Aimé Bonpland had just wrapped up their climb of Chimborazo, the highest volcano in the northern Andes. They were in Quito, Ecuador, and their plans would take them another 1,300 kilometers, or about 800 miles south, to the city of Lima, Peru. And the first two-thirds of this next leg of their journey would be through the Andes. And then they would cut over to the Pacific coast and continue south to Lima. From Quito, Humboldt and Bonpland hiked to a volcano called Cotopaxi. Cotopaxi is a very active volcano, and in fact, it's one of the tallest active volcanoes in the world. Unfortunately, Cotopaxi has also been the most destructive volcano in all of South America. Since 1534, it has erupted 10 times. And Humboldt and Bonpland arrived at Cotopaxi in September 1802, and Humboldt described Cotopaxi as being, quote, "one of the most majestic and awe-inspiring views I ever beheld in either hemisphere." After visiting Cotopaxi, Humboldt and Bonpland continued south through the Andes, and after crossing into Peru, they eventually came to a town called Chaima. And it was in Chaima that they climbed into rafts and floated down the Rio Chaima to where it empties into the Amazon River. Now, I should note that the Amazon River at this point is not actually called the Amazon River. It's called the Maranhão River. And they ended up spending 2.5 weeks exploring the headwaters of the Amazon River, collecting all sorts of plant specimens, mapping the course of the Rio Chaima. And afterwards, they continued making their way south towards Lima. During this portion of their trek, Humboldt made yet another great discovery. This time, it was locating the Earth's magnetic equator. And this discovery of Earth's magnetic equator was a very important one, and it proved once and for all that the Earth's magnetic field varies predictably with latitude. Humboldt described that as you move from the North Pole to the equator, the intensity of the Earth's magnetic field or force diminishes. Humboldt felt that more than anything else he had accomplished scientifically, this discovery was his most important scientific achievement. He later wrote, quote, "I have considered the law of the decrease of the magnetic forces from the pole to the equator as the most important result of my American journey." I'm going to move on to the point at which Humboldt and Bonpland reached the Pacific coast, and they did so at the city of Trujillo in Peru. From Trujillo, they continued south along the coastline to Lima. And they arrived in Lima on October 23rd. And at that time, Lima was a pretty tough town, and neither Humboldt nor Bonpland hoped to spend much time there. Their primary goal now was to find a ship that would take them to Mexico, which was the next leg of their journey. And on December 24th, 1802, Humboldt and Bonpland sailed to the city of Guayaquil in present-day Ecuador. I should mention that during the 1,100-kilometer or 700-mile cruise to Guayaquil, Humboldt studied the flow of the cold current that went northward along the Peruvian and Ecuadorian coast. This current actually originates in the Antarctic, but its coldness is due to the fact that it wells up from the deep waters in the Pacific. And the prevailing winds push the warm surface waters away from the land, and these warmer waters are replaced by much cooler, plankton-rich water from below. And this plankton attracts all sorts of fish and birds, making the current, in fact, the most productive marine ecosystem on the planet. And this whole process, by the way, is disrupted by what is called El Niño, which not only devastates the fisheries in the area, but also causes large-scale changes in weather patterns throughout much of the Western Hemisphere. Anyway, Humboldt was the first person to scientifically measure the temperature and the rate of flow of the cold coastal current along Peru and Ecuador. And by the mid-1800s, this cold current, in other words, the current along the west coast of South America during non-El Niño years, became known as the Humboldt Current. So if you've ever heard of the term Humboldt Current or Humboldt Current, that is what the term refers to. Today, the Humboldt Current is typically called the Peru Current. One other thing that I want to mention is that throughout Humboldt's stay in South America, he made a lot of observations of the native peoples of the continent. He studied Inca ruins, Inca history, and later wrote a lot about what he encountered during his visit. And in contrast to just about everything else that was written about the native peoples of South America, Humboldt's writings showed great appreciation of the indigenous peoples of South America. And these writings went on to inspire many others to explore Inca ruins, including John Lloyd Stephens and William Hickling Prescott. Also in his writings about the native peoples of South America, Humboldt again denounced the conquest and enslavement of the region's indigenous peoples by the Spanish conquistadors. About the European invaders of the region, Humboldt later wrote, quote, "A darker shade of color is not a badge of inferiority. The barbarism of nations is the direct consequence of oppression by internal despotism or foreign conquest. It is always accompanied by progressive impoverishment and diminution of public fortune. Free and powerful institutions remove such dangers." On February 15, 1803, Humboldt and Bonpland left Guayaquil, Ecuador, and headed for Mexico. On March 23rd, Humboldt and Bonpland arrived in Acapulco, and after collecting various scientific data in Acapulco, they set off for Mexico City. And among the important, not to mention pioneering things that Humboldt did during the journey from Acapulco to Mexico City was take detailed geological notes on and make accurate measurements of the geological formations that he saw along the way. And what he produced was essentially a cross-section of the geology of the territory between Acapulco and Mexico City. This type of geological cross-section would be widely imitated in the years to come. Even today, the technique is considered an important tool of geological research because it allows a synthesis of all kinds of data into an easily readable graphical presentation. Not only that, but when Humboldt arrived in Mexico City, he found records on the geological formations that continued on to the north all the way to the United States territories of Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado, and he added all of these data to his cross-section, and in the end, Humboldt had created a very long cross-section of the geology of Mexico and the western United States, and this would form the basis for exploration in the southwestern United States. Humboldt's cross-section would also be used by railroad companies for surveying routes for their rail lines. And it's because of Humboldt's geological cross-section maps that a lot of places in the United States are named in his honor, including Humboldt or Humboldt County, California, Humboldt Peak, Colorado, and so on. While Humboldt was in Mexico City, he spent a lot of his time studying Aztec history, both in the local libraries and also at the ruins nearby. And it was in Mexico City that Humboldt made yet another change to his travel itinerary. Up till then, the plan was to head from Mexico to the Philippines. But in Mexico City, he decided not to go to the Philippines. Instead, he and Bonpland would go back to Cuba and then continue on to the United States. And the reason Humboldt canceled the Philippines portion of his trip was primarily due to the fact that he wanted to get back home and publish the results of his expedition. But there were other reasons, too, for not going on to the Philippines. Many of Humboldt's scientific instruments had by now gotten damaged, and he couldn't replace them in Mexico. And he also realized he would never catch up with Baudin's round-the-world expedition. He reveals all this in a letter to the secretary of the Institut National, in which he wrote, quote, "The damaged state of our instruments, the futility of our efforts to replace them, the impossibility of meeting Captain Baudin, the lack of a ship that could bring us to the enchanted islands of the South Pacific, but above all, the urgent need to keep pace with the rapid advancement of science which must have taken place during our absence, these are the motives for the abandonment of our project of returning via the Philippines." I should note that among the scientific advancements that had occurred back in Europe during Humboldt's journey, that Humboldt was unaware of, was Alessandro Volta's invention of the battery. Being fascinated with Luigi Galvani's animal electricity hypothesis, not to mention electricity in general, this was a big event to miss out on. Unfortunately, I don't have time to talk about all of the different places that Humboldt and Bonpland visited during their stay in Mexico, so I'm going to jump ahead a bit. On February 19th, Humboldt and Bonpland arrived in Veracruz, and a few weeks later, on March 7th, they sailed to Havana, Cuba. On April 29th, they departed Cuba and headed to Philadelphia. When Humboldt and Bonpland arrived in Philadelphia, one of the first things that Humboldt did was write a letter to then-U.S. President Thomas Jefferson. Humboldt really wanted to meet Jefferson. Jefferson shared a lot of the same scientific and political interests as Humboldt did. And Jefferson at the time was also president of the Philosophical Society in addition to being president of the United States. And I want to read a portion of the letter that Humboldt wrote to Jefferson. I think it shows the personal side of Humboldt. This is a longer quote, so I'll let you know when it's done. In his letter to Jefferson, Humboldt wrote, quote, "Mr. Jefferson, arrived from Mexico on the blessed ground of this republic, I feel it is my pleasant duty to present my respects and express my high admiration for your writings, your actions, and the liberalism of your ideas, which have inspired me from my earliest youth. For moral reasons, I could not resist seeing the United States and enjoying the consoling aspects of a people who understand the precious gift of liberty. I hope to be able to present my personal aspects. I am quite unaware whether you know of me already through my work on galvanism and my publications in the annals of the Institut National in Paris. As a friend of science, you will excuse the indulgence of my admiration. I would love to talk to you about a subject that you have treated so ingeniously in your work on Virginia, the teeth of mammoth, which we too discovered in the Andes." And that's the end of the quote. It's not the end of the letter, but I think it gets the point across. I think it's also kind of funny how I ended there. Imagine writing a letter to Thomas Jefferson and saying that you want to talk about the teeth of a mammoth. I like that. Within only a few days, Jefferson wrote back to Humboldt and said, yes, let's meet. Well, that's not literally what he wrote. This was the early 1800s, so writing was a bit stiff. Here's what Jefferson actually said. Quote, "A lively desire will be felt generally to receive the information you will be able to give. No one will feel it more strongly than myself, because no one perhaps views this new world with more partial hopes of its exhibiting an ameliorating state of the human condition. In the new position in which the seat of our government is fixed, we have nothing curious to attract the observations of a traveler, and can only substitute in its place the welcome with which we should receive your visit, should you find it convenient to add so much to your journey." Well, that's a long-winded way of saying, yes, let's visit. And when Humboldt and Jefferson met in Washington, D.C., they had long discussions on all sorts of topics, including meteorology, agriculture, and astronomy. The two got along very well, and in fact, they wrote to each other for many years after their meeting, until Jefferson's death in 1826. And just to drive home how close they became in their letters, Humboldt referred to Jefferson as, quote, "my friend." On July 9, 1804, Humboldt and Bonpland departed from the United States and sailed back to Europe. 3 weeks later, they arrived at Bordeaux, France, and from Bordeaux, Humboldt continued on to Paris. His five-year expedition had come to a close. Not surprisingly, when Humboldt arrived in Paris, he was given a hero's welcome. His brother's wife wrote a letter to her husband saying, quote, "It has rarely fallen to the lot of any private individual to create so much excitement by his presence or to give rise to such widespread interest. Alexander continues to make the greatest impression. His collections are immense, and to work them over, to compare and develop his ideas, will require from 5 to 6 years. He is not in the least aged. His face is decidedly fuller, and his liveliness of speech and manner has increased as far as that is possible." One person in Paris who didn't much care for Humboldt was Napoleon, who in late 1804 was coronated emperor. Napoleon knew enough about Humboldt to know that Humboldt was a big fan of democracy, and Emperor Napoleon was not exactly a fan of democracy. Humboldt attended the gala following Napoleon's coronation, and the encounter between the two men was not exactly cordial. When Humboldt was introduced to Napoleon, Napoleon simply said, quote, "I understand that you collect plants." When Humboldt replied that he did collect plants, Napoleon said, quote, "So does my wife." Then Napoleon turned his back on Humboldt and walked away. This, in fact, was the only time that Humboldt and Napoleon ever met each other face to face. After all the hoopla subsided with Humboldt's return to Europe, Humboldt set about writing up the findings of his five-year expedition to Latin America. And I've mentioned a couple of these publications in previous episodes, his book on Cuba and his book entitled Essay on the Geography of Plants. And there are a few more that I want to mention now. The first book I want to mention is one entitled Aspects of Nature. Aspects of Nature turned out to be one of the most popular of all of Humboldt's books, and it was also Humboldt's personal favorite. Aspects of Nature consists of 8 essays, ranging from the physiognomy of plants to the dangers of the Llanos, from the structures of volcanoes to the beauty of the Orinoco. And the work was meant to capture the direct experience of nature as though readers were there experiencing it for themselves. Humboldt's intent in writing Aspects of Nature was to provide the wider public with the same intense pleasure that he found in the aesthetic and intellectual enjoyment of nature's beauty and wonder. Just to give you a sense of the tone of Aspects of Nature, here's a sentence from the preface. Quote, "To minds oppressed with the cares or the sorrows of life, the soothing influence of the contemplation of nature is peculiarly precious. May they, escaping from the stormy waves of life, follow me in spirit with willing steps to the recesses of the primeval forests, over the boundless surface of the steppe, and to the higher ridges of the Andes." Another massive publication that Humboldt worked on for the rest of his life was one entitled Voyage to the Equinoctial Regions of the New Continent. This turned out to be a 30-volume tome that covered every imaginable thing Humboldt did during his five-year expedition through Latin America. Humboldt would popularize this account in a 3-volume publication entitled Personal Narrative of Travels to the Equinoctial Regions of the New Continent. And it was this shorter 3-volume publication that would prove to be a major source of inspiration to a young man named Charles Darwin. The last publication that I want to mention is one that Humboldt entitled Cosmos, a Sketch of the Physical Description of the Universe. Cosmos was basically Humboldt's magnum opus. In Cosmos, Humboldt attempts to outline all knowledge about the physical sciences in a way that would reveal the underlying order in the universe, in a universe that appeared chaotic. Humboldt called Cosmos, quote, the work of my life. Cosmos also had some other purposes, too. It was intended to advance the betterment of mankind by helping in the spread of technological knowledge and by making the benefits of science available to all nations. In fact, Humboldt saw science as a uniting factor among peoples. With Cosmos, Humboldt sought to promote the humanitarian, democratic causes that he had held deeply throughout his life. On May 6, 1859, less than a month after sending the fifth volume of Cosmos to the publisher, Alexander von Humboldt died. He was 89 years old. Next to his bed, his niece found a piece of paper containing the last words Humboldt ever wrote. It was from the book of Genesis, and simply said, quote, thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. Alexander von Humboldt was buried in Berlin in the family graveyard. I think some of the most succinct eulogies written about Alexander von Humboldt were ones published in the newspapers shortly after his death. In the New York Tribune, they wrote, quote, Humboldt's fame belonged not only to Europe, but to the world. And in the United States especially, probably no man who was known to us only through the medium of his scientific writings was held in equal reverence and admiration. But what will forever distinguish Humboldt from the mass of physical inquirers who had preceded him is his study of the universe as a harmonious whole, and his search for the laws of order, beauty, and majesty beneath the apparent confusion and contradictions of isolated appearances. The New York Evening Post wrote, quote, nature was to him a marvelous whole, all the parts of which were intimately connected with each other and conspired to one grand and harmonious result. Humboldt biographer Gerard Helfrich wrote, quote, by opening up a new continent to scientific inquiry, by laying the foundation of so many branches of modern science, by revolutionizing research methods through careful observation and measurement in the field, and especially by urging the scientific enterprise toward the search for unifying principles, Alexander von Humboldt played a crucial part in creating science as we know it today. Today, as science continues to strive for the big picture, with such all-encompassing theories as chaos and superstrings, Humboldt's quest to grasp the unity of nature, far from being a dusty anachronism, is as vital as ever. For throughout history, the synthesizing impulse has proved a powerful, even world-changing tool for understanding the universe, capable of penetrating the intricate, contradictory web of surface phenomena to reveal the universal, unified cosmos beneath, that fundamental, unchanging phenomenon we call truth. And that concludes this five-part episode on Alexander von Humboldt, German explorer of Latin America. I hope you enjoyed the series on Humboldt. He was truly one of the great explorers of the last few centuries. And if you'd like to learn more about Alexander von Humboldt, I've posted some good books to check out in the podcast reading section on 66south.com. The Explorers Podcast is brought to you by 66south.com. If you'd like to give me feedback on these podcasts, you can reach me by going to the website where I've posted different ways to contact me. I want to thank those who have recently sent me emails with feedback and also suggestions, not only on future podcast episodes, but feedback on past podcast episodes. And I also want to thank those who gave me a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you haven't done so already, I'd be so grateful if you could go to iTunes, search for Explorers Podcast, and then give me a 5-star rating. I only say this because these ratings actually help boost the visibility of Explorers Podcast on iTunes. In other words, the ratings actually make it more likely that Explorers Podcast will show up in search results. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more.